Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Issue 16, question mark? I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me today, as always...
Kat!
And Pat.
So, today is actually going to run a lot more like one of our 0.5 issues. We'll be doing reviews and only reviews.
We have no news, except just news about our podcast.
Yeah, exactly. We have news about the podcast, so as we're rolling to the end of the year, we're going to be doing a bunch of specials. So really, we're not going to be a traditional episode until 2018, so look forward to awesome content that we have going forward.
I'm just saying, if you don't want to listen to your family, you can listen to us. I will gladly come into your home and talk to you.
I would much rather listen to me than my family.
Doesn't everybody?
Some of my family talks in Spanish, and I don't know what they're saying, so I guess I'm in agreement with that one.
So, viewers, if your family talks in Spanish and you don't understand them, we're here for you.
All right. Well, with that said, we're going to jump right into reviews.
After we've offended an entire language speaking people.
That's what I do.
Like one of the top five highest spoken languages on the planet. Let's get into reviews.
Cool. I'm going to go ahead and just start. I've got Jupiter Jet number one. Once again, we apologize always for the video quality. We're working on trying to come up with some new stuff.
2018. Donate.
Yeah. If you want to give us some money so we can buy better cameras, that's always good too.
We'll take that too.
Well, we're in a weird mood today.
It's going to be a fun show.
This is Jupiter Jet number one. This is out of Action Lab Comics. It's written by Jason Inman and
really
Ashley
heard,
V. Robinson.
Heard of Action.
Super indie. So the reason that we have this is shout out to Collider Video. Jason Inman and Ashley V. Robinson are both pundits on that channel, and they do comic book related content specifically, and comic book and Star Trek. So they're fellow nerds, and they finally got a comic book together, and it was super super fun. I actually really enjoyed this. I know what it is, and this comic knows what it is. It's very much that whole like throwback 1940s or 1920s tech. So there's sci-fi elements. It's super fun. It's fanciful. They said that one of the big inspirations for them was to do content that was like Pixar, that there wasn't a specific audience that you're going for. They want something that anybody can pick up the shelves and read and have fun with. And it's world building. You can see the bones. I think anytime it's a new creative team like that haven't done this, a lot of times there's too much words, a lot of dialogue heavy, expositional to try to get the story going. But I really like this. I really like the art style. It is very reminiscent of Pixar. I shouldn't show people the last page because that's kind of not cool. But yeah, there's like...
So pick cool it up and here's the last page.
Right, exactly. Cool adventuring. Awesome, like, just good cartoon work. You know, having the single panel with the action flowing through it. This is really solid. This is a really great debut, and it's an awesome...
She's changing
alleys
like Superman.
She's changing an alley like Superman.
Really?
yeah, but super fun. I recommend picking this up. If nothing else, support people who love comics and are making them. You know, it's good stuff.
Nice. Well, that's a solid review to start us out. All right, what do you have for us, Kat?
It made me sad. I didn't finish it because I just got so... bored. I have the DC Holiday Special, the 2017. I was hoping for just, like, it says 11 festive fables, which, in the back of my mind, I'm like, shouldn't it be 12? We're just gonna start there. I'm already gonna know. Shouldn't it be 12? The other part of it is I was hoping for...
Yeah. And a part
I actually got disappointed. So, from the cover, I'm like, oh, hopefully it'll be, like, a collection of cute little stories, and that would be great. No. Like, the first, like, two or three. The first one, like, the second one is...
Batman being sad because nobody's with him on Christmas.
No! You know what's worse? Is the first one is Superman sitting in a bar drinking a club soda being sad.
No. Why do you go to a bar for a club soda?
I feel like Superman should give up the whole club soda. He can't get drunk, so he might as well just order the beer to save face.
Yeah, right?
Like, to make it look like he's drinking a beer. Or an eggnog. I mean, keep it classy.
And then the second one is a Batman one.
I feel like he's more of a whiskey drinker.
That's true. I could stick
on the rocks.
You know what? Bourbon. He's a country boy.
No, that is true. Uh-huh. Arnold Palmer's. Yeah. Uh-huh.
So good. DC. We are going way off the rails. We're in a really good mood today, though, I think. So.
But the second one was a Batman story about a little boy who was cold, and then some people didn't let them in their house, and the grandma died. And I'm like, what is this? I wanted to smile this tonight. Jesus.
This is a very DC depressing Christmas.
Yeah.
DC depressing Christmas.
Oh. Zing. I didn't catch that one.
Then I got to this one, and you see a soldier dead, and I'm like, I'm done. Like, I just thought it would be freaking happy. The cover says happy, people. It says you're gonna enjoy this.
Technically, no. It does not say happy. Just for the viewers,
it
does
say fable, which kind of in the implication
that's
like
festive fables. And so fables that does have festive, an implication. I mean,
yeah,
but fables, they're not contractually obligated right? to give you happy fables. We're talking like OG German fairy tales.
Fables are supposed to teach you something.
I mean,
so.
I'm sad. The Halloween one was awesome, and I was hoping that the Christmas one would be more like cheery. And the world already sucks. I don't need to know more about how the world sucks at Christmas too. Okay. All right, I'm done now. Probably.
What do you have, Patrick?
Okay, so. I think I'll start off with, this is Spider-Man 235, as in Miles Morales Spider-Man,
ooh,
just to make that more clear. Brian Michael Bendis, writer, Oscar Bazaldúa. Sorry about that, Oscar. so, I've been reading this since number one, and I have all the, like, compilations and stuff, and Spider-Man's one of my favorite. I don't typically like to just like it as a thing in general, because, like, it's kind of my, like, superhero sort of guilty pleasure. Like, he just goes out and punches people, and then that's the whole comic.
Oh my god, it's Superman!
But, yeah, basically, and I typically don't like stuff like that. But this, it seems like Brian Michael Bendis is really trying to go out on a bang creatively. Like, this is not, it's not just like a fizzle. Like, this is how the world ends, not with a whimper, but with a bang.
Oh, nice.
And shit. So right now we have a group of six of the craziest villains about to steal, led by Miles Morales' uncle, Aaron Davis, as the Iron Spider, trying to... are going to steal a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier.
That's a big undertaking.
Since S.H.I.E.L.D. is no longer existing, apparently, since, I guess, whatever that last big Marvel event that I don't want to mention by name was, and S.H.I.E.L.D. no longer exists, so it's basically just, like, sitting in a warehouse and they're going to steal it. Meanwhile, Miles is going out in his just hoodie and jeans as Spider-Man because he just wants something new. He doesn't want to be in Spider-Man's shadow anymore, basically. And so he's just trying out something new. Also develops a weird, basically, like, web power.
What?
Yeah. He, like, because he has his, like, I don't know. He's, like, he's just evolving both, like, as a person and as a superhero. Towards the end, because he lost his web shooters a few issues back, and so he was just going out doing his thing, and now he has, like, web thing, like
what?
Essence of web that comes out of his finger. I don't know. It's really cool. And then we get some mommy-daughter issues between the bombshells. It's a very dense issue, actually, like, as far as, like, what is actually going on. And it's still fun. It's a fun read, still. Huh. Like, it's a good... There's villains, and there's heroes, and then fighting. But, like, also a lot of just, like, personal development things. It's a very, very good issue. So, Spider-Man 235, Brian Michael Bendis, this, I was like, before I was like, oh yeah, you need a fresh breath of air to like do this. But now I'm kind of like, do you though?
Do you really?
Sad now that he's going.
Uh-huh. Anyway. Cool. So.
That sounds pretty awesome, actually. The idea of Miles evolving to be even further different from Peter is, I think it's smart. It, you know, you can have the two characters existing in the same universe, but make them different. Make them different for people to actually read both books.
Yeah. You don't need 20 Spider-Men.
No.
You can have Peter Parker, and you can have Miles Morales, and you can have Ben Reilly. They don't all have to be named Spider-Man.
No. Yeah, but what do we... come up with a cool identity, right?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so we've got a couple of reviews coming up that Kat and I share...
I think we share the rest of them, honestly.
We do share the rest of them. Yeah. Do you want to hit the two at the same time, then? We'll just bounce back and forth and talk about
it. We can totally do that.
All right, so we're going to start with Witchblade Numero Uno from Image Comics, written by Caitlin Kittredge, with art by Roberta Ingranata. Beautiful name. Mm. So the big draw on this is that Witchblade was a boobs and bullets kind of character.
God, that's right.
That's exactly what it was. She had a gauntlet. Sarah Pazzini had a gauntlet that transformed over her body and ripped all of her clothes off, and she had an armored, like, ancient...
like a Sailor Moon transformation.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a very hoary transformation sequence.
But it launched a lot of careers, and it was actually a really well loved comic book. But it's definitely part of that like late '90s milieu of that's how you make a female character.
This just made
this
a thousand times better. I forgot
the peak of fan service.
Right. This is a reimagining by two female creators, and I think that's really important.
Yeah.
So you have the lead character. Oh my gosh, and her name escapes me. I actually don't say it very often.
I don't think
it's Alex.
You're Alex Underwood.
And she comes into possession of a magical bracelet, and she is a counselor for victims in the lawyer setting. So as a case is happening...
She's like protective services.
Yes. So she her job is to kind of...
protect women from their abusers.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
And the implication is not necessarily just women, but in these cases that are like that, she's the
like
one
who's... Like abusive cases.
Yeah, she's the one who to be able to console, to discuss, make sure that if protection of the actual official kind needs to be done, that she organizes that. And she falls into the lap of this Witchblade after being killed, question mark?
I don't really actually know what happens to her. Like, they keep saying that she's like, you don't remember feeling alive. And I'm just like, wait, what?
Yeah, there's a lot
of,
like...
it's the one thing that I got really, it got convoluted for me. I'm like, wait, so did she already die, or is she going to die now?
They do a lot of this. I actually really enjoyed the storytelling, but I feel like this is going to take multiple reads to really put it into context. It watched like a Tarantino movie, like where it was like things occurred out of order, but you piece it together as it's happening.
That's probably why I had such a hard time, because if something's not linear, I literally have to create a spreadsheet to follow it. It's really bad.
And it's quite beautiful, and their whole reimagining of the Witchblade itself is really interesting.
Honestly, the one part in it that I liked, and besides, and I forgot that that's what the Witchblade was, is it was a boobs and bullet kind of character, and I totally spaced that. It was when the gauntlet itself starts talking to her, and it starts doing famous women in history.
Yes, so it's showing like the
I don't know who the first one is.
Powerful women.
Pretty sure the second one is Joan of Arc.
That might be the only named one, but they give you the hints that warrior women in the past were assisted by the Witchblade.
Yeah,
and it's like this, you know. And it's very subtle. They've simplified it into being literally just this sentient thing that feeds off of the blood of who its host is. And there's a lot to it. This is definitely the beginning of some world building, and I really dug it. I thought this was a nice debut. I think the visual elements are really interesting. The crying blood for, like, making her actually look like a witch and not, you know, like the entity itself being the core element, but who it bonds to. Very, like, Venom-esque, but... Mm. It's just written really well, and if it stays street level like this with the elements of magic, this could be a really special book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just slipping through it is a very, it's just very cool looking. Like, I wasn't actually reading any of the story, just looking at it, And, like, I usually try to pick up Image number ones. I don't know how this one escaped me, but I'm sold.
Yeah, I don't either, because it's, like, I wouldn't, looking at what I wrote last night, I was like, my thing was that it felt short to me, and that's where I was kind of like, okay, I guess I need more,
what,
but.
25 pages is short?
You know what? I think it's its pace. It moves very briskly.
That's like, probably it what it was. And I usually, I mean, I'm not saying you need to go, like, ridiculously slow, but sometimes when you do startouts, at least for me, you have to go a little bit slower because I need, I mean, the ending part, I was like, oh, that happened? I'm shocked that she did that. Like, I'm like, it's not as climactic as they try to make it to be, so that kind of made me a little sad, but I'm like, okay. I mean, it's the first issue, it's fine, whatever.
I reverse that for me. I like the first issues to kind of, like, be a run and gun and go straight for it, because I, as a collector, have failed in my past at collecting things. I had Ultimate Spider-Man in my hand off of the shelf, Ultimate Spider-Man number one, and I didn't buy it because I flipped through the issue, and I was like, Spider-Man's not even in this. So I need to have that hook in the number ones. Like, I want to know where the story is going to go.
I mostly just, honestly, I'm sitting at this point where it's like, so if she died?
That is the question. It's like, it's really unclear whether or not, like, the death is the catalyst. Like, she had to die first.
I just want to know, like, at this point, I'm like, how did you die? And you don't remember it.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Well, then
so I'm, like, sitting in this hazy fog of,
what? And they're kicking back to, like, her formal life as, like, a news journalist and, like, in Afghanistan.
That's
what some really cool stuff.
That's what it looked like. And that's the other thing, too, is it had a lot of imagery, and it looks like somebody that she also knew, died as well in that time frame. And so, it sounds like it's in, being in that third world element, it makes sense that that would be where she would acquire it, because Mystic Relic.
Oh, yeah, I didn't think about that, so finding it.
So it kind of just, it's just offhand, and that kind of makes a little bit more sense, but, cool. I mean, yeah, I think the brisk pace, made it harder for me, because in the storyline wasn't very linear, so I had a harder time. I was like, okay, wait, now we're so it was kind of one of those of I have to it'll be one of those ones I have to take slower, otherwise I'll be lost and I might have to be a nerd and make a spreadsheet.
Nothing wrong with that. You gotta piece it together.
All right.
I think we're gonna run through Klaus if you want to, or Klaus if you want to take the lead, and then you can hop in.
Yeah, that's fine,
because we all know I love Christmas. I didn't ever mention that before.
The most wonderful time of the year.
Most depressing time in DC
Comics. Of the year.
Yeah, freaking seriously. So, Klaus and the Crisis in Xmasville was awesome! I'm just saying, Dan Mora is, yes. Just yes, and yes, 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 yes. I, honestly, even just the comic book itself, like, how much? I forgot how much this even was.
$7.99. I have no idea what is happening in this.
It's okay. Most of us didn't either. And I was like, all right, well, you know, there's like a wolf thing.
So this is this is written by Grant Morrison. So that's why we don't know what's going on. and it's art by Dan Mora. This is... Klaus, the first hardcover, was one miniseries that was done, I think, 2 years ago, and it kind of has this idea
That's kind of why I missed out on stuff,
too. I don't think that they connect, other than the fact that it's the character of Klaus.
No, they definitely don't, but I feel like there were some things in there I'm like, what?
Yeah, this gets deep into, like, the different mythologies of Santa Claus.
That is the one thing I will say, if you know more about Christmas than me, which is totally, completely possible, if you understand the different Santas from the different cultures, you probably appreciate it more.
Fun fact, the original St. Nicholas was actually Turkish.
I wasn't surprised.
Yep.
And I'm like, now I need to go into the book. I'm like, hold on.
The Santa Claus as we know him was actually a Coca-Cola advertisement from the
50s. That's why I knew that.
Hey, that's a main theme in this entire book.
Really?
That's literally why. That's the one thing I did know, is Santa was a 1950s from Coca-Cola. And that's the thing, is they call, it's, what is it? It's Polo Cola.
Polacola.
Happiness is Polacola, and it's a Santa Claus, and there's, like, a bunch of people in the town walking around as these zombie Santa Clauses.
They also invented polar bears for
advertising. Oh, no. Yeah, excellent.
I knew it.
I was wondering how they got out, man. So, and that's the one thing, is, like, I feel like if I understood Christmas and other cultures, I probably would have enjoyed this even more.
And can Dan Morrow just get on a Batman book already? Like, seriously? I know you guys can't see that very well.
I mean, I can see it and I can promise you, it's pretty grand.
Seriously.
Yeah, that's basically Batman.
Yeah.
Like, let's be real here.
So the main, like, through line of this is that the founders of Xmasville are trying to get rid of Claus so they can basically own the image of Christmas. And then on top of that, the youngest member of this family wants to relaunch Polacola worldwide. And so what they want to do is vilify Santa and then have their new working man, Santa Claus. And this is set in 1985. And it has a lot of, like, the 1980s, like, I'm a businessman and I'm doing what's right for you kind of culture.
He's totally correct. Like, there's this guy, he even has the giant brick cell phone.
Yeah, and he has like a blue suit with a bow tie. Yeah, though. Like it's brilliant.
And you like first run into him when he's talking on the phone too, like on his giant cell phone. It's insane.
It's amazing. And then they like the actual true antagonist of the story though is an alternate Santa Claus from the dark dimension that has traveled and crash landed on Earth and feeds off of the imagination of children.
Yeah, this shit is twisted, man.
This is,
and he looks like a vampire, alright?
He looks, this is amazing and like absolutely insane and
then you get to see, I'm pretty sure that,
the Santa they want.
I'm pretty sure that Klaus is supposed to be the American Santa Claus.
Yeah, I guess.
Like, I think he's supposed to be the American one, and I'm pretty sure there's another, you run it and then you find out that there's more Santa Clauses, but not Santa Clauses.
Yeah, what are the, his like, he, is he's he Father like, Christmas, or is that?
Something around it, something like that.
Or
it's not
like
Father Christmas.
Father Frost, or?
Something like that.
It sounds like they need to drop some, like, not, like.
It's like the Tumbler from Batman, and that's, like, one of the sleighs.
Yeah.
It's like, this is science fiction and fantasy and mythology. This is just nuts.
So this is the thing that keyed me off, that if I understood Santa and other cultures, I probably would have loved this even more, but you find out that there's apparently more Santas, and one of them is like, he looks like the actual Santa. He's got the white beard, except he's ripped.
Grandfather
and
Frost.
And he's got like a Thor hammer.
Oh shit, I missed that in the art. I pour over this and I missed an element of the art. Go figure on that.
My area of influence extends only as far as my name does. Most people outside of Russia Santa. Have never even heard of me. And then there's a woman who I'm pretty sure I don't even know. Like, I don't even know who this chick is, but I'm like, wait, who are you?
I think she's Jack Frost.
Yeah, you're probably right on that one.
Yeah. So this is batshit
insane.
Father's
Frost. Father's Frost and Christmas went to fight Lunar Civil War. What is going on in this? This thing is awesome.
Sorry, I've kind of been wanting to make this joke. Since, okay. Like, he's mentioned that there were multiple Santas, but it sounds like they need to trademark Santa's identity with a better clause.
My insides hurt.
On that note, seriously though,
insides are literally starting to bleed.
if you want something absolutely irreverent and
kind of
batshit. And honestly, this was kind of like the positive Christmas vibe, you know?
It
like,
was!
The whole idea of Santa Claus being like a superhero really resonates.
He's just like I don't even know if we
he's like
him. He's like a wandering
okay,
warrior.
Okay, wait a minute. You can call him with a magical flare gun.
Alright.
That's
right.
Pretty superhero.
Yeah, you're right. I forgot about that.
Yep.
That's how he's right. That's how he's called. It's insane.
Right.
Grant Morrison, I love you like so much. You've written some of my favorite stories.
More nonsense. I need more nonsense.
And then Patrick, do you wanna finish up?
Okay, so before we get into our final group review, I have the Jetsons number 2, which is, if I can find the title page, written by Jimmy Palmiotti. Sorry, Jimmy.
Jimmy Palmiotti.
Palmiotti. I love your writing. I'm bad at pronunciation. And
Me too.
By Pierre Brito.
That one I can't help you with.
So, yes. So this is, since issue number one, and we're only in issue number two, this is crazy. I was really sad to find out that it was only a 6-issue series.
I'm kind of wondering if it'll end up turning into 12, kind of like the way that Scooby-Doo Apocalypse kind of took a payoff, or...
I don't think so, no? Because in issue number one, we're introduced to the fact that there is a meteor that is going to destroy Earth. The Earth is dying, and in issue number two, we also get another world-ending phenomenon that is introduced into...
I need this in my life.
Very quickly into it.
I didn't.
What is wrong with you? I have it!
I had 10 comics on my pull list this week.
Alright, you might watch me on camera walk out of this room because I had 15.
So...
I picked up 2 extra ones.
So me too!
So we also get a little bit more into George Jetson's workplace environment, which is very dangerous. He almost dies from electrocution in trying to fix something. His employee code number, by the way, is 1962-3CBS, which is the air date.
That's what I thought.
The number of seasons, and then one of the channels that it ran on in its original run, respectively. 1962 premiere date, 3 seasons, CBS, one of the original channels.
It's only 3 seasons? I really have a hard time believing that.
There were like 28 episodes.
Yeah. Oh, you know, back then they ran a season for the whole year.
Yeah.
This is just, and we get spacely, at one point, all the buildings, gravity stabilizers destabilize, and they're, falling and tilting, and people are going crazy, and Mr. Sprocket is like, Jetson, you need to get in there to repair it, because I'm losing money. And I just hear, the original voice in it.
The little guy?
Yeah, basically. Awesome. Oh, my gosh. We get, it's just, it's
I love these comics because they're just so much... nostalgia. It's like Scooby-Doo Apocalypse, the things that you see, because they hide them fairly well, but you, if you knew it and you've watched it and you know about it, you find them, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, it's just so well written that there's just so much going on. I could honestly talk about just this one issue for an entire 30-minute episode.
Really
there is. I don't even want to bring up. I don't even want to bring up other elements of this. Just so good.
So it's keeping up with what the first my one gosh. Promised.
It is blowing itself away.
Really?
I love issue number one and issue number two. I'm reading through it, and there is so much going on every panel, and it's not forced at all. It's so natural, so flowing, so apocalyptic that, oh my gosh. Okay, I could just say oh my gosh for 30 minutes about this.
And that would be enough.
And that would be my whole review. Just oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And then, okay, so I'm just going to end it on that before I carry myself away.
Nice.
So.
Well.
Alright, so I think... sort of as our last review, we're going to get into Batman White Knight issue number 3.
Which I literally read 20 minutes ago.
So Kat is going to have a very fresh take on this.
Yeah!
Written by Sean Murphy with art by Matt Hollingsworth.
No?
Written by Sean Murphy with art by Sean Murphy.
Oh, Sean Murphy. That's right. Oh, sorry.
I feel like we talked about this.
Colors by Matt Hollingsworth.
Sorry about that, Sean Murphy. Credit where credit is due.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I get 2 issues of this. I get the variant and the regular one because they're awesome.
Variant?
The variant is freaking sweet. I love the variant.
So, I'm going to lead off with spoilers. If you haven't been reading this book, shame on you. And
I'm sad.
There's 2 Harley Quinns. There's Marion Drews and there's Harleen Quinzel. And they're different characters.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so popular and well-liked, they're talking about putting it in the regular DC, and I'm just so happy about
Marianne
it.
Marianne Drews being the booty shorts and baseball bat yeah. Harley Quinn, whereas Harleen Quinzel is the more respectable tights, yeah. Tights and like jester hat.
Harleen Quinzel is the psychiatrist in a jester suit. Mm-hmm. You know, like that's really the best way to say that. And the other one is the, you know, backwards feminism, right? As Harleen states in the previous issue. So right. This is definitely, it's more of the degradation of Batman that happens in this, that he's reckless at this point, and he is really, he's getting into his own head and truly believing that even though Joker is quote-unquote cured, that it's still in there and that he's still motivating all of the violent events that are happening in Gotham. And we're also seeing that Jim Gordon is pretty blindly devoted to Batman's cause.
That was, for me, one of the most interesting things about this issue, is not only, like, the degradation of Batman as a character, but of Gordon following Batman to degradation. Yep. Just parallel, like, each of their, like, storylines, like, parallels each other, basically, where Jim Gordon is like, no, I can't do my traditional, like, my actual police work, I need to follow Batman as he destroys the city.
Yeah.
So as they take on that deep note, I'm just gonna go on the not deep note of Harleen Quinzel's a freaking badass.
She's a super badass.
She literally tells Joker, Napier, yeah. Hold my purse.
Yeah.
And then proceeds to beat the shit out of people.
Yeah.
Come on!
Yeah. She's and it's really funny because Jack, now not being Joker, is very much like, he's very mousy. Like, he's very mm-hmm. quiet. He's brilliant. He's kept all of the intelligence that he had.
Well, that's the one thing I can appreciate too, is Harleen Quinzel is actually, like, Harley Quinn always came off as a giant ditz to me.
Right.
But Harleen Quinzel is so intelligent. So smart. Yeah. And she's, like, she's not on his level, but she's close to him.
Yeah.
And that's the best part to this. Well, I think you see him bouncing back with each other.
She can understand his motivations, mm-hmm. and she always did. And I think that's what she found strangely attractive and fell into that hole.
Mm-hmm.
But it never gets explored more than, like, what she is. But, yeah, this issue then centers around a specific event where, like, the cops are trying to hold back all of the supervillains.
Because they came together. I'm sorry, I've been listening to the song all day.
They came together because they're under, like, a weird version of the Hatter mind control. But Batman blindly goes running into a building thinking that the villains aren't going to follow, and
they do.
They do, and he gets wrecked. Like, blindly goes in there, nearly dead, obviously refuses hospital treatment, and goes back to the cave, where normally Alfred would patch him up, but as we know in the story, Alfred's basically on his deathbed.
Yeah.
He's being treated by chemicals that Freeze is working with Batman on, trying to figure out what's going on, and in another absolute heart-wrenching moment, Bruce passes out, nearing death. Alfred wakes up and connects his life support system to Bruce Wayne and dies saving his son as he's
sitting in
his
chair.
Also, one of my favorite parts of this, we learn the actual price of Batman's vigilanteism.
Oh,
which
costs
the city of Gotham $3 billion a year.
And it's disguised as part of, like,
the natural disaster relief plan.
Yep.
And I think that's one of my favorite parts, is when they're standing at a podium and Harleen is holding, like, this little child, and they're like, this is Michelle. She's been in the hospital for a year after, after the roof collapsed in her mom's apartment. It was one of dozens of roofs Batman drove across that evening while chasing Firefly, who ended up escaping.
Yeah.
Like, is that worth what Batman is doing to, like, put a little child, like, in the hospital?
It makes these awesome questions while not ignoring the mythology of the character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you have a moment like that that certainly says, if Batman killed, we would be safer.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's core concept. But if Batman killed, is he a hero?
Yeah.
Because
by his own morality, he doesn't kill.
Right. And if, but,
so,
but, what he's
but
doing,
if he does kill, then is he a moral person?
Right. And, but the thing is, him not killing is hurting people. Like, he's not stopping crime.
Yeah, because that is true.
He's putting people, super criminals, in jail, and they're escaping. And at the same time, we see a moment where Alfred dies. The character that has been the father figure in all of Batman's history is dead. And we see the total breakdown of Bruce Wayne.
The thing is like, his sidekicks even say his moral compass is now gone. Mm-hmm. Like, he's basically a loose cannon is essentially what they're saying. And they're not even, and honestly, Dick Grayson is a lot more mousy in this one, and Barbara Gordon is not.
Well, Dick is degrading into Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, like, his fault is that he's becoming not the Batman that we knew him as when Dick Grayson was Batman, but Bruce.
Mm-hmm.
Which the thing that's always been interesting about the idea of a Dick Grayson Batman is that he's a lighthearted Batman. But this is a guy who's really going, I don't want to turn into what I'm turning into. And then they drop a fucking bomb on us and say that Jason Todd was the original Robin.
It was a literal auto. I mean, they were sitting here while I was reading. It was a what?
Yeah, and that, like, that's the first time they've really, like, changed the mythology in this story.
But at the same time, it's an important change because now, all of a sudden, I feel like it shifts from, I don't know a whole lot about Jason Todd. I do know that him and Batman didn't get along, though.
They didn't because Jason Todd was reckless.
Well, yeah, he was a loose cannon, essentially. And now, I'm assuming that there was always some sort of jealousy with him and Nightwing. And
yes, because he wanted to be Robin, so he was always pushy off that. But that relationship goes away. Because
Well, now it's reversed.
Yeah.
And now the jealousy is coming from Dick Grayson because he's like, he always loved him like a son.
Yeah.
He never really. Well, and the thing is he even, and honestly from my understanding too, is even when Dick Grayson was Robin, him and Bruce were more like brothers than a father-son relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Alfred was his father figure right. as well. And so he even says in this comic, Bruce was never my dad. Yeah. Alfred was.
Yeah, so they retain that relationship. What this also means is it gives us a time frame for the way that this universe has unfolded. If Bruce had Jason Todd as a mentor, you know, he was mentoring Jason Todd, and then he went on, Jason Todd was killed, because we don't actually know what happened there.
I think they say the same thing where it's the Joker killed him.
Right, but it's always in quotes because we don't know what actually happened
yeah.
there. And then after that, people don't realize we're actually filming. after that, he then takes on another ward. So even after a Robin died, he made the choice to take on Dick Grayson. So
Tim Drake just came in and said, you're doing this because I know.
Tim Drake's character is, you need an element of light, and that's what I will be. So, yeah, this is a deep well to fall in. We're saying is that you should probably be reading
I would White also Knight. Like to point out that the other Harley makes an appearance.
Oh, yeah.
The other Harley Quinn shows back up.
And has a new identity entirely.
Yep.
And I would also like to point out that I love Harleen Quinzel's mouth in this, by the way. Like,
what do you mean?
Like, just the way it's drawn, like, her smile.
Oh, she always has, like, kind of a cracked smile-ish.
Look at that smiled. Panel right
there. Yeah.
But I'm going to steal your book for a second, because it's not on this cover. Never mind. Don't worry. I'm lying to you.
Yeah, so Sean Murphy, great illustration just of a mouth.
Yeah. One of the things he's designed, too, is so Harley has the tri-diamond design. Mm-hmm. Neo Joker's design is four diamonds, and in the top one is Joker's acid flower.
Hmm.
So, like, that level of design is going into this. Like, each character has their identity. And let's talk about, like, the redesigning of all the supervillains. His Mad Hatter is absolutely demented and terrifying looking as this small, like, dwarf, like, evil creature. And then the brain of Clayface and the Day of the Dead wrestler version of Bane.
Yeah, luchador Bane, yes, basically.
It's amazing. But we should probably wrap up, right?
Yeah.
Final
yeah,
thoughts? We're... Everybody reading Batman White Knight?
You better be reading it. This is my suggestion. Read it. Even right. if you don't know about Batman. I'm
well,
trying.
We've got lots of awesome content coming up, so yeah.
With bye. That, bye.
Yeah, join us.